Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live, 101.3 KPCG online, kpcg.fm, live link at thetrumpet.com as well. Coming up on this Tuesday edition, 102-year-old lady. She fulfills a strange bucket list item. We'll have the details about that. Also, gun sales are setting records. A lot of people want guns and are buying them. More details about that. And the racial divide. It's being highlighted to gain some political clout. Not a great idea. More details coming up on Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on this Tuesday edition of Trumpet Radio Live. We're on 101.3 KPCG. We have a live link at thetrumpet.com and kpcg.fm. There is our website over the air here on the FM dial, 101.3. Thanks for being with us. Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon with you here today. And Grant, you just got back into town. You were traveling over the last few days, and I believed that you would be here, and you kept me guessing, but you did arrive, and glad to see you back.
Yeah, I sent you my news story at something like 3 o'clock in the morning, something like that, so it was a pretty late night getting back from Oregon. That's where we were the last few days.
Yeah, it was nice. You enjoyed it? Good trip?
It was very nice. It's beautiful up there. We got to go on a Herbert W. Armstrong tour of all the areas around Portland and Oregon City, where he basically grew up and started the Philadelphia era of God's work.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of details about that in the autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong, which is being reprinted and is available. You can find that at thetrumpet.com. Pretty cool to see those locales. That's a beautiful area of the country.
It is, yeah. There was a little bit of rain on and off throughout, and it was probably around 60 degrees most of the time, so
perfect.
Very pleasant outside, and had a lot of people who were very hospitable to us, taking us on the long tour and taking us out for meals and things like that. So it was a great time.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of fun. Some interesting stories to talk about today, as always. This first one is it's pretty funny, and I always like to highlight ones that put the police in a good light because they get a lot of negative press. This is from the Huffington Post. A 102-year-old gets arrested fulfilling one zany bucket list wish. Edie Sims, she's 102 years old. She lives in Missouri. She was handcuffed and placed in the back of a police cruiser Friday as officers helped her fulfill an unusual bucket list wish, getting arrested. She had never been arrested, and she wanted to. This was all in good fun, of course. This says Sims was seen being cheerfully escorted to St. Louis Five-Star Senior Center with accompanying St. Louis police officers that said they couldn't be happier to help her. She basically makes items and donates it to this senior center. She's been doing it for years, and she was never able to go to the center to meet the people that she was making things for. So they decided they would take her there to meet the people that she'd been kind of helping all these years. And they were going to give her a ride in the police car to do it. And so she asked if she could be handcuffed, and they said, sure. So they cuffed her, and they pulled up to the senior center, and she was waving her hands for everyone to see the handcuffs. So she fulfilled this bucket list wish, 102 years old, and got arrested. Most people don't like getting arrested, but this was kind of a fun arrest for her.
That's the way to do it, too. Don't even commit a crime to get arrested. And there are no problems to be caused. She clearly is a fan of the police, which we need to see more of.
Well, I thought it'd be funny if somebody was out there with, you know, their cell phone taking footage. Oh, look at this. Look at the brutality. She's smiling and got the cuffs on. No, it's okay. She wanted this to happen. So I thought that was kind of a neat story and kind of a fun one there. So she fulfilled her bucket list wish of being arrested at 102 years of age. And she'll now get a life sentence. Which will last 2 days.
Two more days. She's 102 already. Won't last too long. Yeah, actually, speaking of friendly police, I saw a police officer actually in downtown Portland while we were up there, right outside the Moda Center where the Portland Trailblazers play. And he was surrounded by all these young black children, and they were kind of taunting him a little bit, I guess, but he was among them and talking to them. And one guy got up right next to him and said, "Are you going to arrest me?" And another girl walked past and said, "Man, I hate the police."
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But he was engaging them, at least, and showing that he's not just going out there to hunt them down.
That's an interesting story, because it's
like 10 years old. All these kids are out there at 11 o'clock Saturday night with no adults around.
And where are they getting that idea from, that the police are bad? They're hearing it on the media. They're hearing it maybe at home. So it's interesting, because it highlights just the trend, which is a very negative one, mm-hmm. towards officers. And in the media, I think it's very responsible in that. We've talked about that before, because they really put them in a bad light. And so people believe it, and then they automatically have this animosity where they really shouldn't.
Yeah, that's right. I actually saw some friends up there in Oregon who had just been up in downtown Seattle, and they stumbled across a Black Lives Matter protest while they were up there. And it's amazing, because at every one of these protests and every one of these events where someone is speaking out against the police, guess who's right there protecting their right to do that? It's always the police looking befuddled as to why they are being so openly criticized, when clearly they are there to protect and to serve.
Yeah, well, that's really interesting, and it ties into this headline here from the Washington Post. A teen was brutally beaten after making pro-police statements. His mom says it's a hate crime. Brian Ogle, he suffered a fractured skull and brain trauma. In the brutal attack following a Friday night football game, police and the school district officials said that Ogle, who is white, was beaten Friday after a high school homecoming game. His mother told the station that Ogle had spoken out on Facebook in support of law enforcement after some students at his school wore Black Lives Matter shirts to class. A Facebook page that matches Ogle's name and likeness includes numerous posts about the Black Lives Matter movement and violent protests that erupted following police shootings. So he's taking the other side of it. He doesn't think the Black Lives Matter movement is right or is a good movement. He posted that on Facebook, which I think is people's right, from what I understand. And he's been beaten almost to death. He may die. What about his freedom of speech?
Doesn't exist in some cases anymore, it seems like. Yeah, he is completely free to say that blue lives matter. That should be true. And if Black Lives Matter is open to all people, as it claims to be, why would they be so incensed by what he said to beat him almost to death? Are they not supposed to be getting along with police? They're saying that the ones who riot are not truly a part of Black Lives Matter, and yet the kids at school, once again, who affiliate themselves with Black Lives Matter, are the ones committing violence.
Bad situation. So really feel for the guy. I mean, it's getting to the point where, you know, I guess people are being intimidated into don't say anything. Don't give a counter opinion or else. And so that's the situation there. You feel for him, feel for his mom. You know, she's hoping he makes it to his 18th birthday. He may not. And if he survives, he may have brain damage. I mean, his skull is fractured in three places. That's attempted murder.
Yeah.
aggravated assault. I don't know. There's all kinds of charges there. Hopefully they catch the ones that did it. And really, the mom is saying this should be a hate crime. My guess is it won't be, but which is always crazy. Every crime is a hate crime. You ever had a love crime occur?
Probably not.
So I understand that they have some sort of, you know, just a random robbery versus I'm going to target a specific person. They try to, I think, break it down that way. Not that, I don't think that totally matters. But in any event, the old hate crime tag comes out. But I don't know that they'll look at it in that way. In some ways, it doesn't matter. I mean, hopefully they catch the people that did it and they are punished. That's a terrible thing. You can have a disagreement. You don't have to beat somebody. That's terrible.
Yeah, and I even wonder how they were able to fracture his skull in three places. They must not have just been using their hands
do that. They think they hit him with the butt of a pistol.
Ooh.
Just based upon the way his head was damaged, I guess.
At least they didn't shoot him.
Yeah. Horrible, horrible situation there. And we've got a story coming up later about how some of these racial divides are being used for the political cycle. It's a bad deal. The Philippines president, Duterte, he's a kind of an outlandish individual. Well, he's lashed out again. It says firebrand Philippine leader Rodrigo Duterte told U.S. President Barack Obama that he can go to, well, I'll let you guess. I think we know. Tuesday, he said this as he threatened to end his nation's decades-old alliance with the United States in favor of China and Russia. The fresh tirade came as the Philippines and the United States launched annual war games that Duterte had already warned may be the last of his presidency in response to U.S. criticism of his deadly war on crime. So he's been very much out against drug dealers, killing many of them, I guess, and really going after some people there in his country, and so the U.S. has been critical of that. He doesn't care. He has made that known. Last week, he compared himself to Hitler, and then, I guess, apologized. Maybe he didn't realize exactly how that would sound.
Yeah, he said he was going to wipe out the drug dealers like Hitler did to the Jews, pretty much.
Yeah, which obviously the Jews were very offended by, and rightfully so. Yeah. But so anyway, he comes out again now, and he says, I have lost my respect for America, he said, as he complained at length in two speeches about calls by the United States, the United Nations, and the European Union for him to respect human rights. And they said, Mr. Obama, you can go to, and we'll leave the blank there, but I think you know what he meant. So he doesn't hold back. He doesn't. They should bring him in as a third party in some of these debates, the presidential debates, and just let him have his 2 cents. Might as well make it more entertaining.
Come out socking both candidates repeatedly. That would be really entertaining.
Just to see the faces of both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump as Duterte just goes on and on. Oh, that would be terrible, but somewhat humorous.
It's a little bit sad that everyone is so concerned about the human rights of drug dealers who are destroying so many lives. In a way, you do have to have a strong way of cracking down on those people, because otherwise, if there's no risk at stake for a drug dealer, there's not much reason for that person to change his means of income, really.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's I can see the danger in going that direction that Duterte is going, but I think one thing he does understand is that the people that he's ruling, you got to rule with an iron fist or you're just not going to get anything done. And so that's one thing the U.S. has never really understood when we go into some nations and try to work with them or try to build some sort of democracy, and they don't do democracy. They don't get it.
Right.
And so it hasn't worked, but so very controversial methods over there, but I think they are making some headway. So I don't, not that it's a good way to do it necessarily, but it's different, that's for sure. Here is a this shouldn't be surprising, but it kind of is. It's from the website The College Fix. Columbia University to host no whites allowed student leadership retreat. This is microaggressing me as a white person.
I'm upset by this too.
Students of color at Columbia University can apply to attend an upcoming racially segregated retreat hosted by the school that promises to embolden and empower participants, according to organizers. And again, this is so funny because they fought for years to not have segregation. Many people have. And then now certain groups want to segregate themselves. They're just going back to, like, I don't know, the pre-60s or whatever, when that was more common.
Yeah.
And I'm like, do they get it, though? Like, you're just resegregating. It doesn't make sense.
I finally just clicked in my mind what exactly they want, because on the one hand, they do complain so much about, usually about whites not including them in different things. But then on the other hand, they say that, well, we don't want whites involved in some of these events. So really what it comes down to is, we're in control of whether or not we're segregated. And sometimes, a lot of the time, actually, they want to be segregated, which is just really mind-boggling when you consider the nation's history and all that was sacrificed to basically stop that entire practice.
Yeah, and that's really what it comes down to with all this equality talk. It's not about equality. It's about, well, we just want what we want when we want it and how we want it. and get out of our way. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, a lot of people want that, and that's why you have wars. The Students of Color Leadership Retreat 2016 is open to students within the Columbia University undergraduate community, including its all-women Barnard College, I guess, unless you're a white woman. Although, I don't know. Maybe I don't know if white women can go to this or not, because women are considered a minority group, so I'm not sure.
Yes, white men are obviously the pinnacle of evil, so you have to at least keep them out. Maybe least, you can accept white women.
Maybe.
Maybe possibly children.
That's true. But see, the funny thing, too, is it's all about how you identify. So maybe I identify different.
They can't discriminate against us based on looks. That's based on a binary code that is clearly outdated.
Yeah, and that I have no control over. They say it's slated for the weekend of November 12th, so mark your calendars, at Greenkill Retreat Center at the New York YMCA camp. The event is billed, quote, as an intensive weekend of personal development, empowerment, and community building for student leaders at Barnard and Columbia who identify as African American, American Black, Latino Hispanic, Asian, Asian American, Pacific Islander, Arab, and Middle Eastern Native and Indigenous and multi-ethnic, multiracial, according to the university's website, as well as the retreat's online application form. So that's a lot of options, but apparently no whites allowed.
That's really racist, but apparently, according to Google, you can't be racist unless you're white.
I saw that.
Yeah.
The application asks students to state their gender identity expression, their gender pronoun, their racial identity, and also answer a few questions on what they plan to gain from attending the retreat, which is paid for, by the way, by a private Ivy League institution. Which I think this is the funniest part about it to me is that they're going to provide free lodging, food, and transportation. And then on the application, they say, what do you hope to gain from this? Well, I've got an idea. Probably lodging, food, and transportation. I think that's what people are hoping to gain.
And there definitely won't be a lot of love toward whites built up at this retreat.
No.
You can imagine if anything is said about white people, it's the one race that is excluded out of all these different options they put out there. So clearly they're not fans of the whites if they go on this.
You can imagine trying to go to this just to see what would happen. Am I in the wrong? Am I in the wrong bus? Is this not the place to be?
As white men, couldn't we just say that we are actually black women because that's how we identify? This has actually happened where men all the time say they're women and that's accepted. And then there was that Rachel Dolezal who is white but claimed to be black because she kind of got a spray tan and she was head of what is it? NAACP, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People.
And
she's white.
She identified that way. Yeah. So, yeah, that's where it gets tricky, because if you can identify as whatever you want, then how do you separate? Anyway,
you can't stop a single white man from getting in if you apply the same standard to them as you do to everybody else.
This the Multicultural Office also offers a racially themed mentoring program called the Columbia Mentoring Initiative. They're going to have programs on the following groups: Arab and Middle Eastern Family Tree, Asian Family Tree, Black Family Tree, Indigenous Family Tree, Latinx Family Tree. I'm learning new phrases or terms. The LGBTQ Family Tree, that doesn't exist.
You
can't have one.
Mosaic,
the Mosaic Family Tree, international and multiracial. So anyway, it's just bizarre. That's from the College Fix if you're interested in looking at that. But they're actually going to pay for that, this No Whites Allowed Student Leadership Retreat. How can you learn to be a leader if you can't learn to get along with people?
Well, as long as you can tightly control who's following you, then you don't have to have anyone in disagreement behind you, I guess.
The idea, it's crazy. Crazy, crazy. Here's another headline. Gun sales hit 17th straight monthly record, up 27%. Gun sales hit the 17th consecutive monthly record in September, according to FBI data released on Monday. And overall sales are up 27% compared to the same period last year. They're flying off the shelves. A total of 1,992,219 background checks were processed through the Bureau's National Instant Criminal Background Check System for the month of September alone, higher than the 1,795,102 conducted in September of 2015. So the guns are flying off the shelves, and that leads us to, of course, this is happening segment. This is a write-up that baffles the mind. We could also call it Today in Poor High School Journalism. all kinds of things. you know, you're sitting around with a lot of time in your hands, you're paid to write, you don't know what to talk about, and you start making things up. Here's the headline. Why the Second Amendment applies only to your muskets and dueling pistols. They say it's time to rethink all this, starting with what the founders would have wanted. Let's honor the Second Amendment in all its glory, dripping with sarcasm here. They say, and agree that the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed so long as the arms in question were in use in 1791, the year the Bill of Rights was ratified. That's right. Annie, get your single-shot musket and your dueling pistol. Well, the thing that I thought about that was, okay, if you want to do that, freedom of press, that means that you could only write something out, I guess by hand, and then roll it off of a printing press from 1791 and then post it on trees or hand it out to your friends and neighbors. Maybe you could have someone on a horse deliver it to the next town. So this article is ridiculous on every level, but you can't pick and choose, because I don't think the founding fathers envisioned the internet where this was posted.
Right.
So if that's the logic, that we have to go back to 1792, were they concerned about transgender rights in 1792? Was that a hot topic?
That's one of the ones I was thinking about. Or were they concerned about changing the definition of marriage? Probably not.
Yeah. Yeah. 1791. Sorry. That's the date they're giving here for the Bill of Rights being ratified. So just crazy thinking. Now, no doubt there are gun problems, and there's problems there for sure in terms of what people are doing and some of the weapons that are out there. But to make just some kind of throwaway article like this and throw it out there just sarcastically, like this is a solution to anything. You know, we have to go back to 1791. There are people that do that. They live without technology. And so, I mean, they could go live there, I guess, if they want to. Are we supposed to conduct warfare like it was 1791? Go up against Russia and China with muskets? And what are they talking about?
This is an article written by a guy presumably without access to the internet, even though he posted on the internet, because clearly he didn't take the time to look up any facts or do any research whatsoever. He just wrote some snarky prose and clicked publish.
Well, even there, it's like, would they be okay with somebody getting murdered as long as it was with one of those weapons? Like, that's okay? You know, it doesn't solve any problems.
Exactly.
It's just a flippant comment. So anyway, when I read that, though, I thought, well, okay, you want to pick and choose, you know, and talk about guns, but we'll talk about what you're doing. You know, freedom of press, all these things people love to talk about. And if you go back to 1791, it wasn't like it is today. And so that's so funny, though, because that's the pick-and-choose argument, right? Well, the Founding Fathers never intended semi-automatic weapons. Well, did they ever intend homosexual marriage? Did they ever, you know, they're picking and choosing what they want to highlight. Mm-hmm. And then saying that the Constitution allows freedom for whatever they feel like doing. But, oh, yeah, you know, you're taking it too far when it comes to these other topics that they don't like.
A lot of people are starting to finally see that a constant tactic of the radical left is to just pick and choose all the time. The law applies. It's amazing how you just hear the Constitution quoted so thoroughly when they think it backs up their point. But anytime it doesn't, they say it's outdated and needs to be changed. Which one is it? Are we going to update the document, or are we going to quote from it as if it's still as accurate as ever?
Right. Ties in directly to the Trumpa Daily Radio Show today with your host, Stephen Fleury. Make sure you listen for that. It's coming up here in a bit on KPCG, or you can get the archives online at kpcg.fm if you can't catch it live or a replay. Talks today about the fact that both the Republicans and the Democrats are terrified of losing the election in the U.S. And why is that? Well, it's because of the legacy that President Obama has created, where he pretty much does what he wants and then lies to the American people about it, which has happened over and over and over again. And so each side knows this, and you think, oh, well, what happens, say, if you're on the left, what happens if somebody from the right gets in? And they do the exact same thing. Now, you know, like you talked about with the Constitution, now all the arguments that you like, the other side doesn't like. So those are gone, right? Once you throw out law and the checks and balances that are there intentionally to keep it all balanced, then it's just the rule of a super president. What happens if Donald Trump gets in? What happens if Hillary Clinton gets in? It's really bad news for somebody, isn't it?
It is, and that just shows the importance of morality in a type of government like this, because we've seen it get to the point where basically one side will do whatever it takes to get whatever they want, and the other side will do the same. And so they're electing leaders who will ram their ideas through no matter what, no matter what the rules are, no matter what the law says. It's just a matter of what do I want, whatever I feel is the best. And the leaders are reflecting that now. It's pretty much gotten to the point where we've had such a tyrannical presidency the last 8 years that clearly whoever replaces him is going to have plenty of precedent to lead the country the exact same way. One who will continue it further toward the direction of the radical left, and one who will enact all these pretty much bullying tactics going the other way around. So which is better? Really, neither one. It's getting away from the right form of government that this country has had for a long time. It's not the best form of government that exists, but it is the best form that possibly man could create.
And that's probably why the big press is so scared, because they've completely undercut the rule of law in the country and completely allowed what's gone on the last 8 years to just go on. But now what if it flips around on them, where somebody gets in that is not, doesn't have their pet interests at heart and thinks the opposite way on it? And they've undercut themselves. Mm-hmm. They didn't even realize what they were doing. Once you cut out law, you're in a lot of trouble. There's some great quotes on this Trump Daily Radio Show audio clips of Justice Scalia talking about, here's somebody who actually understood the Constitution and just throw it around, you know, to support his freedom to do whatever he felt like that day. He actually understood it, and he brings out some really great points about how, yeah, government is supposed to be set up to where it's not easy to pass things because people need to have a say. And he brought out the point about minority groups. He says the biggest safety they have are those checks and balances, because if somebody just tries to throw something in there, well, there's a good chance somebody that has their interest at heart will say, well, wait a second, I don't like this, and it'll slow up the process. Everybody had a voice to some extent, but now they kind of eliminated a lot of voices, and just the super president talks and the press backs it up. But what happens if it's the next guy, if it's the Donald Trump that comes in? They're very nervous about it, and you can see why.
Yeah, that's why there's such a constant push to get Hillary Clinton elected, no matter what it takes. And they know they're sacrificing credibility long term. They're just terrified of the fact that Donald Trump will probably rule the nation the same way Mr. Obama has, except in the opposite direction in terms of what he believes for the most part. That is a terrifying thought for them. And someone like Justice Scalia, talking about the rule of law, he was a great example, because many times he ruled the opposite of his personal beliefs because of what the law said or what the law allowed or didn't allow. He, a couple times at least, ruled in favor of someone enacting abortion when he personally strongly disagreed with the practice. It just happens to be that the law supported them possibly making that possible, and he did not have the authority in his mind, and as he shouldn't have had, to just change things based on his own political views. And it's so hard to even find 9 people in this country now who will just serve on the Supreme Court based on what the law says. They have to pick 4 liberals, 4 conservatives, and one who kind of is a swing man. Why can't they just pick 9 lawkeepers who will enforce the law the way it's supposed to be, regardless of their views?
Yeah, people a lot of times tend to think that no law means more freedom for them. But the reality is, if law keeps everybody safe, mm-hmm. but once the law's gone, nobody's safe. Because then you're subject to the whims of a leader, of a tyrant, of a dictator. And that's, of course, why the U.S. was set up in the first place the way it was, to get away from that. But that would require some base understanding of history. So let's move on from that.
So out of date.
Well, just it's not, you know, it's not talked about today. And then Justice Scalia brings it up in some of those quotes about how even people that were going into constitutional law didn't really have much of a grasp of the history. You know, Joe Average, okay, maybe, you know, he didn't remember much about it. Not that that's good, but you could see where that may happen. But people that are actually going into it professionally, you think they'd know it up and down and back and forth. he said in most cases, he said about 5% of the people he talked to actually had a pretty good understanding. 5%. So that's not great when you consider the way judges and so forth, you know, dole out decisions on things. So really good Trumpet Daily Radio show today. It brings a really good perspective to the whole political cycle, which is good because it's easy for people to kind of get behind one line of thinking or the other or whatever. This brings it back to, okay, the rule of law has been destroyed, and so no matter who you bring in there, you just bring in another person that's going to rule as a super president, mm-hmm. as it were. And Stephen Fleury highlights an article by that title. I think it's called The Rise of the Super President. It's at the Trumpet. Andrew Miller wrote that a while back, and you can go find that and brush up on that if you'd like to do so. You know, we talked a while ago about some of these fast food restaurants. You remember we were talking about Carl's Jr., and then the question came up, like, what is Carl's Jr. versus Hardee's? Is it the same thing or is it different?
It's hard to tell.
Hard to tell. Yeah, I've been there too. But somebody must have heard us because they wrote up this thing about it. things you didn't know about Hardee's and Carl's Jr. Hardee's and Carl's Jr. together are among the top national chains. They have a combined footprint in nearly every U.S. state. But they say they are indeed completely different chains. They're owned by the same company, CKE Restaurants, since 1997. Hardee's was founded by a man named Wilbur Hardee in Greenville, North Carolina in 1960. Carl's Jr. got its start as a Los Angeles hot dog cart in 1941, founded by a 24-year-old bread truck driver named Carl Karcher and his wife, Margaret. And they expanded and then ended up being owned by the same company. So here's a couple of things about Hardee's and Carl's Jr. that you don't know, apparently. Or I didn't know. That's what they said. Wilbur Hardee lost his company in a game of poker.
Ooh.
Hardee may have been a good businessman, but he was also a bit of a gambler. In 1961, after a successful year of business, he brought on two entrepreneurs named James Gardner and Leonard Ross to help expand the restaurant. After opening a second successful outpost, Hardee lost his controlling share in the company to the duo in a game of poker and decided then to sell his remaining shares to them outright. So he started it and then lost in a game of poker. You shouldn't play poker. You're going to lose things like restaurants. Number two, they say only two states have locations of both Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. Oklahoma.
What?
Yep. Ta-da. And Wyoming. Only two states that they have both of them.
I've only seen Carl's Jr. in this state.
Yeah, I've not seen Hardee's here. I'll have to poke around and see. They should be right next to each other. That would throw you for a loop.
Which one do you pick? Are their menus exactly the same?
I'm not sure.
I always feel, well, their logos are, except for the name that's in the logo, but it seems like they're so similar and it doesn't, and they're owned by the same company, so why don't they just merge to kind of prevent all this confusion?
It's a good question.
Everyone's confused about it.
There was a comedian years ago, I've mentioned this I think before, but he said he found the center of the universe because he walked out of a Starbucks and across the street was another Starbucks. And he's like, this is where the universe begins and ends.
It's ideally, you'd spread them out a bit more, so that has to be what the deal is there.
Yeah, so you do see that at times. Number three, the junior is there for a common sense reason, they say. Carl Karcher's locations of Carl's Drive-In Barbecue were big operations. Drive-ins with plenty of seating and wide-ranging menu. He named his smaller burger-focused spinoff Carl's Jr. Because they were just that, smaller than his flagships. So if you're really hungry, go down to Carl's Sr. He'll take care of you. And not so hungry, go to Carl's Jr.
It seems like Carl's Jr. prevailed, though. I don't see too many Carl's Sr.'s around anymore.
Yeah. They close at 4 every day. Number 4.
Gotta go to bed at 6.
Yeah. Number 4, Hardee's briefly sold fried chicken and roast beef sandwiches. Hardee's was purchased by a Canadian company called Imasco in 1981. They also owned Roy Rogers chain, so for a while they sold chicken there. But anyway, those are some of the things that clears up the great mystery about Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. They're owned by the same company, but they're not the same. But they're sort of the same.
I think that's my next mission, is to go investigate both chains and see what's different about them. I'll visit one of the Carl's Jr.'s and one of the Hardee's. and then come back with a report.
That sounds like a really good idea and a really bad idea.
I know. I'm not looking forward to it.
I wonder if anyone ever like works at one of them and then goes over and works at the other. And they have to get that humbling, like, oh, you think you know everything coming from Artie's. Well, this is Carl's Jr.'s, buddy. You need to start at the bottom.
Or they work at one and are disgusted by it, so they go eat at the other one instead, which would mean they're different, I guess.
Here in Oklahoma or Wyoming, you could work at Carl's Jr., go to Hardee's for lunch. And then they could swap. They could just swap restaurants. A lot you could do.
The possibilities are absolutely endless.
They are endless. Then go find that town where there's the two Starbucks and just keep going back and forth.
They're in a vicious competition with each other for profits.
Yeah, really strange. Sometimes you see them, you know, put them too close to each other and then inevitably go out of business. But yeah. So those are some of the things there with Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. This is an interesting write-up you've got for us, Grant. Breitbart, Hillary Clinton in Charlotte, she says, my worries are not the same as black grandmothers. So here she goes in Charlotte, been volatile there racially, and she's trying to drum up support and trying to pander to that voting base, saying that they're having more problems because of their race. So she's really stirring the divide here.
Yes, and the sad part is she gave her speech in a church, and she was quoting scriptures several times, which I was shocked by. She really doesn't seem like a religious person in
any
way.
Thou shalt not lie?
Yeah. Seems like she has carelessly flaunted a lot of the Bible's admonitions, and now she's quoting scripture in a church. To me, that made about as much sense as Christ quoting an evolution textbook to an atheism club. It just would really make no sense at all why this would ever happen. And here she is quoting scriptures in a church. It was pretty shocking to me when I read this, and I actually thought it was a spoof for a while. But anyway, she admitted that her grandchildren don't share the same fears as black Americans because of their white privilege. Another false term. She said, because my grandchildren are white, because they are the grandchildren of a former president and secretary of state, let's be honest here, they won't face the kind of fear that we heard from the young children testifying before the city council. So she was referring to some of these children talking before the city council and saying that they're afraid of growing up as black children in America, which you could see the radical left just feasting on those types of proclamations.
Well, sure. The only thing there that was said that's probably accurate is that, yeah, because of being the grandchildren of president and secretary of state, yeah, they're going to have a more privileged life. But making it a racial issue, I mean, what about, say, the president's daughters? The current president, don't they have a pretty privileged life? Is it a racial issue or is it just kind of an economic issue?
Mm-hmm.
It's more of an economic issue. And, yeah, I can understand some people saying they're afraid to grow up, but it would have everything to do with maybe their surroundings or what they've seen or the neighborhood they're in. To make it out like it's a race thing, that's only because that's what they're being told and they're believing it. Just like the story you mentioned from Portland. Oh, we don't like police. Why? Because somebody told you not to.
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
And the example staying right there in front of them was engaging them. He was very friendly, even though they were extremely disrespectful toward him. I was downtown with James Lauer, and we just stopped to watch because we didn't know what was about to happen. We thought there might have been an issue because they were being kind of jokingly hostile toward the police officer there. But why? Look at the way he's treating you. He's being so kind toward you, and you're still saying right in front of him, man, I hate the police.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing. And the thing here with Mrs. Clinton, that's such a bad thing, I think, is that it's being used just to try to get their votes. And what are you doing? Like, at what cost? At what cost? And that's kind of the, it even gets back to the Trump Daily Radio Show where Stephen Fleury talked about how some of the thinking has been the ends justify the means, which they don't. So, yeah, let's just stir up this racial hatred, make this huge divide so I can get your vote and get into power. And that's what that is. And that's a horrible thing because even if she gets into power, if you have to do it, you know, by stirring up hatred, are you going to be the first one down there to quell the hatred? You can't. The ends don't justify the means there. And that's what's so dangerous about this type of rhetoric.
They really are stirring up a problem they can't control, although they do think they can control the violence when it does build up. The thing is, what if Donald Trump beats her? We've talked about this before off the air, but if Donald Trump wins after she has so relentlessly branded him as a racist, for which there is very little proof, by the way, how are these people going to react if he's the president? Won't they riot 10 times worse than we're already seeing?
Yeah, that they're just setting, and yeah, it gets back to that. Somebody has to win, somebody has to lose. And so in a campaign when you're just completely, both sides, demonizing the other side completely, mm-hmm. how do you ever have a reconciliation and everyone supports the leader that wins the election? You've got this almost a 50-50 split, and it's a pretty a pretty aggressive split, let's say. You know, it's not like over a few little small issues. It's over major things. And how do you brand somebody a racist? What are you going to do later? Say, well, he wasn't as bad as I said. Everyone get behind him and support him. And no one would even hear it if it was said, because you've already just thrown out those very dangerous words, and people believe it.
Right. Each candidate was asked at the end of the first debate if they would support the other if the other was elected president instead. And you could just tell that both were really struggling to say they would support the other because, I mean, really, everything the other person stands for, they completely disagree with and despise. There is really like the battle lines are being drawn. And if you're not on my side, we're going to war. That's pretty much what's about to happen. And it's pretty clear. But here she is in a church, and she's saying, this is a quote, "You know, God loves us all, right? We are called to care for and cherish each other. It's not easy. It is not." She referred to Trayvon Martin, who was one of the first black people shot who sparked some of these protests and riots. That actually happened a few years ago. And she insisted that he was just walking home from the store with iced tea and Skittles. Is that true? I think the record shows he was in a hoodie and a neighborhood watch guy asked him what was going on. And basically Trayvon Martin turned around and started pummeling his head into the ground.
That was a bad deal on both sides there. That was a situation really where it was two private individuals that got into a scuffle and it went bad. But then all of a sudden the police get dragged into that type of thinking, or you know, whole races of people. And it's like, what's that got to do with anybody? It's two people in a neighborhood that both did some things that were probably not the smartest, to say the least. Well, that's their beef. You know, how does that extend? But again, it's they like to take those little examples, throw out the name, and then all of a sudden everybody jumps behind it. Forgetting the facts, they don't matter, just throwing out the names to get people upset again. But like you say, if you really go back and look at those individual cases, they didn't happen the way that the media portrays that they happen, but how are you going to undo it? You can't control Z it.
Exactly.
You can't control Z.
You can't just take a step back and erase what has already happened. And in that case too, the media tried to call the shooter, if you remember, white Hispanic. They made up a term to try and make it a black versus white issue. And here, something like 4 years later, Hillary Clinton is still playing on this with to a black crowd and quoting scripture to try and back up what she's saying as righteous. It's really just disgraceful to see that something like this happen. She also said at the end, "Being stronger together with this common vision means rejecting those forces that try to pit us against each other. So they should reject you because, Hillary Clinton, you are the one trying to pit them against each other." That's really what she just said, even though she doesn't realize it. She is the one who is race baiting here, and she's the one who needs to be rejected. She said that we can acknowledge that implicit bias still exists, not just in police departments, but throughout our country, without vilifying police officers. So we can say that there is institutional racism within police departments nationwide, but somehow that does not cross the line of vilifying the police.
Right. There's no way to separate that in people's minds. You can't. It's really dangerous rhetoric that's being thrown out there. And it's always funny to me to hear, like, say her talk about this, because I'm like, well, why should anybody believe you? Although, I mean, what makes you, you know, the one that sees all things equally and has this great equality in mind and all that. I mean, it gets back to the law, which nobody wants to hear about. I mean, in the debates, it was brought up. One of the candidates, well, it was Donald Trump. I mean, he brought up, you know, law and order. He didn't specify what that would be, but he said, yeah, you have to establish the law and order in the community, and that is the truth, you know. But again, nobody wants to hear that. So it's a very interesting election cycle. It's been talked about even on the Trumpet Daily in the last, I guess, week or so, just how brutal it is. Usually people respect each other a little bit more, the candidates, but they've been very brutal, and now talking about some hugely divisive things that you just can't take back and stirring the pot. So anyway, interesting. She was at that church there in Charlotte, and of all places to address it, it's a really volatile area to get into that type of thing. What was the response to the crowd? Like it? They cheered her. I guess they did, because they were there to see her. So
it seems like it. Yeah, they were pretty supportive, and it does go along with the fact that about 90% of Democrat or blacks regularly vote for the Democratic Party. So that is a very receptive audience for the Democrats. They were very supportive of her, and it would just be nice if the people there would just stop and analyze what she was saying for a second, trying to say that, look, you have these disadvantages just because you're black. So she basically, at one point in there, she said, my grandchildren are better off than some of yours. What about Dr. Ben Carson's grandchildren compared to a white family in poverty living in a trailer park, possibly? Whose grandchildren are better off there? Is it the white family in poverty, or is it rich Dr. Ben Carson, the neurosurgeon? Clearly, Ben Carson's grandchildren will be better off. And it is an economic issue. It's not a race issue. It's not every single white has it better than every single black. I even was talking to someone the other day who was saying, who was just praising, he was going on and on about a black architect who he works with and how really responsible he is and how many great projects he has directed in Portland. I mean, so there are successful blacks in every field in this country, and you won't find that anywhere else. You won't find the minorities and the supposedly discriminated against groups having such great success as they do here.
Yeah, and that was the whole, I guess, hope. People like to talk about Dr. Martin Luther King a lot. But really, I mean, if you look at some of his famous speeches, he talked about individual character, right? That being judged on that individual character, what you've done individually, and not this just systematic, all races are this, all races are that. That was the hope, right? I mean, that's what he talked about. Well, I mean, in principle, that idea is a good idea. People should be judged based upon what they do and how they, you know, and there is a certain truth to it that if you're successful and you've done well, well, you're kids will have a little better time, and it'll probably go that way. And if you haven't, then, well, you know, this country, at least up to this point, has been a place where you could change that. You could change you weren't, you know, born into a system of, well, nothing I can ever do about it. You know, I'm a serf. I can't make it up to the royal court, you know. So it's interesting. But hopefully people can see that a lot of that talk is just a lot of these campaign promises are just that. It's just for votes. And I think people know that, but who knows? Time will tell. It's almost over with, though.
It is.
As far as the election goes, but I'm sure there'll be more of that type of talk flying around out there. It's an interesting write-up. You can read it at Breitbart if you want to. Hillary Clinton and Charlotte, my worries are not the same as black grandmothers. They have two more debates, right?
Yes, and actually a vice presidential debate is tonight as well.
Right.
And I've heard some of the things that Tim Kaine has said, Hillary Clinton's vice presidential running mate, and he's pretty vicious too. So who knows? Maybe that debate could wield some more fireworks than even the first presidential debate did.
I don't know if I have it in me. I don't know if I have it in me to watch it. I'm not up for it. Like I need to rest and eat and just regain my strength before I watch one of those again. But boy, a few more of those coming out. The U.S., there's a new survey that came out. The U.S. isn't one of the top 10 most free countries in the world, according to this study. If you can believe that, they say, with costly health care, a stereotype of obesity, I don't know if that's a stereotype, and a culture of creatively fatty foods, healthy, they say, probably isn't the first word that comes to mind when you think of the United States. That is correct. I don't think of that. They say, but according to the Legatum Prosperity Index findings for 2015, the U.S. is considered the healthiest country in the world. However, when it comes to freedom, an ideal most Americans pride themselves on, the U.S. falls to number 15. So it's interesting. I'm surprised that we're considered the healthiest. I guess maybe if you considered like sanitation, you know, there's a lot of nations that just are pretty filthy. So that could be. Maybe that would tie in. Definitely diet-wise, I don't think so.
We do at least have access to probably the best food sources, even though we don't utilize them maybe like we should, judging by the obesity rate we have.
Yeah, that's true. And we do have access to, most cases, clean water and so forth. They say, so what's the country with the most personal freedom? You have a guess? It's not the U.S.
Oh, Singapore?
Canada.
Oh, that's my second guess, actually.
Canada.
Why do I never go with my second guess? It's the right one every time.
Yeah, you're learning something.
I keep on
here.
Saying that every time I guess. It's my second one.
But then you're going to start like overthinking it. Like, was that really my second one, or do I want it to be my first, so I put it second? Canada, as they say, according to the survey, is the freest country in the world. So congratulations. We have a lot of listeners in Canada at kpcg.fm. And no one's forcing you to do it. You're free up there. New Zealand is number two. And then Norway, Luxembourg, and Iceland. Those are the freest nations, according to this survey. Personal freedom, as defined by the London-based Legatum Institute, measures a nation's performance at both guaranteeing individual freedom and encouraging social tolerance. Canada was ranked number one due to 94% of its citizens saying they believed they had freedom. What? Well, if the survey is based upon who believes they have freedom, wouldn't North Korea be number one? Just tell them what to say. They'll say it.
100% will say it.
Freest country in the world. 94% of the Canada citizens saying they believed they had the freedom to choose the course of their own lives. And 92% saying there was tolerance for ethnic minorities and immigrants. Overall, the U.S. was ranked the 11th most prosperous country out of 142. Well, that's a change there, huh? With Norway snagging the top spot, other areas measured are the economy, entrepreneurship and opportunity, governance, education, social capital, and safety and security. So things are definitely changing here in the U.S., even in relation to the healthcare system. Former President Bill Clinton, I think he came out and said Obamacare. I forget what he called it. It was he said it was I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was not great. Put it that way. I didn't read all the details about it, but the rates are shooting to the moon, like everybody knew they would.
Yeah,
and they've gone up just huge places or huge amounts in certain states. And you can't, what are you going to do? I mean, people don't have money to pay for it. So anyway, I think it's interesting when you look at the prosperity and the freedom side of it that is changing. They say the U.S. was ranked highly in all categories except safety and security, where it has dropped to number 33. In fact, in the study's key findings, it said the U.S. is an increasingly dangerous place. And that's probably true.
It's very true, seems like.
You have to look at, I mean, even just the headlines every day, riots in these different cities and the police now, like they're over the weekend, they were surrounding a police car and kicking it and with an officer mm-hmm. inside and just a bad, bad deal. And so they say it's also the only Western country to register high levels of state-sponsored political violence, the study says.
Wow.
Interesting. According to Amnesty International, the country has the same level of political violence as Saudi Arabia. Really? Safest countries, Hong Kong, Iceland, Finland, Ireland, and Sweden. I've been in Ireland. I felt fairly safe there. So Iceland, nobody lives there, and it's too cold, so that's why nothing's happening. Get attacked by a polar bear, maybe. But I know, I'm sure there aren't any polar bears. I don't know. Somebody will catch me on that one. But anyway, it's interesting to look at that. The U.S. not at the top when it comes to personal freedom, prosperity, or about anything else except for health, but I think that one's exaggerated.
Yeah, that would be the one I would expect to be a lot lower on the list of all of those.
So times are changing for sure. U.S. has been, of course, the most blessed nation ever, really, when you look at it. We have a really good write-up about that at thetrumpet.com, the United States and Britain in Prophecy. You can get that for free. Before we close today, you saw the story, right, about Kim Kardashian
yes.
getting robbed. It's weird. Like, now there's some reports that people don't believe it.
Right.
I didn't read any of it, but the only thing I thought about any of it when I saw it was, you know, when you put yourself out there in social media, like, constantly, eventually that could come back
yeah.
on you. Yeah, I mean, I'm not hoping that it does or anything like that, but the reality is the more you just put yourself out there and say, I'm doing this and look at what I've got and look at all these things, sometimes that leads to trouble. I think it's not a bad thing to think about, you know, because we all sometimes deal with social media. Sometimes saying less is better.
Yeah, saying I'm wearing $10 million in jewelry and currently I'm walking down Santa Monica Boulevard or wherever might not be a good idea, because then you're basically a moving target.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a weird thing, the fame game, because that's what keeps people in the business, but sometimes it can have a negative result as well. So it's just something a little surprising. You don't see well-known celebrities attacked that often, but I guess, but apparently that occurred over the weekend.
Yeah, probably not too huge of a loss for her. I'm sure she's a lot richer than $10 million in jewelry, so maybe that's that could be counted as a tax-deductible charitable donation, possibly.
Well, they said actually the biggest loss is one of her phones, because of all the, you know, people. I'm sure they'll sell the info or whatever happens on there. So that those are the times when I think to myself, I'm glad I'm not famous. You know, nobody knows me, nobody cares. You know,
steal my $2.
Yeah, that's fine. The more you have, sometimes the more you have to lose. That's unfortunately,
right.
So some of the things going on in this world we're sharing here. Trumpet Radio Live Tuesday edition. Thanks for joining us. Make sure you listen for the Key of David Trumpet Daily Radio Show as well. For myself, Dwight Falk, and Grant Turchin, have a great rest of your Tuesday. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG. You can download Trumpet Radio live segments from kpcg.fm.